in Santa Fe. This is the Journey Home Radio Show with insightful interviews and prescient reports, embracing what's real and exploring what's possible. Well, today in this segment, the America 2020 Report with Harvey Stone. And welcome, Harvey. Good to have you with us for the first full America 2020 Report this year.
Here we are, 1999, yet another year closer to 2020.
We made it.
We did it.
One more year, and only now we have to say 21 years.
That's right. That's right. We have to change our script here.
Yeah. Well, I already threw the script out, so what the heck.
Oh, well, new year, new script.
I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. Well, in this first segment, what I'd really like to focus on is the automobile. Now, when you think of the automobile and you think of one person's name, whose name comes to mind?
Henry Ford.
Yes, exactly. We didn't even prime that. That's terrific. God, see, Santa Fe.
I was about to say Geraldine Ferrari.
You could have, and I'm glad you didn't. Henry Ford. Now, Henry Ford really is, in many ways, the person, the single person, because certainly there were many, responsible for the automobile culture, from the development of the Model A, the Model T, the assembly line, and all of that. What I never knew, and many people that I've talked to since then have didn't really know, is that Henry Ford, in 1941, unveiled what he called the biological car. Okay. You ever heard of the biological
car? Well, Tommy's nodding his head.
Yes. Do you know about the biological car?
Well, Henry Ford brought the soybean to the U.S. from China so he could make parts for his car out of it.
Yes. Well, he did an entire car out of plant-based materials. In fact, 70% of the body of the car consisted of a mat of long and short fibers from a variety of materials, including field straw, cotton, hemp, flax, slash pine, etc. The other 30% consisted of filler from soy meal, just what you were talking about, and a liquid bioresin. And when he unveiled this car to the press, the reporters are all around this car. Do you know what he did?
I don't know. He put a little bit of, you know, Aunt Jemima maple syrup on it and took a bite.
No, better than that. Henry was, you know, a bit strange and a bit of a showman. He took an axe. He swung the axe on the trunk of the car so that the reporters could see that the axe would just bounce off and that this really was a real car. And this had the strength of a real car. Now, why did Henry Ford do this? It's interesting, because he's an interesting man. Some of the stuff about what he did in terms of raising wages for workers, etc. There's a whole story in that. But why he built this biological car...
Did he have it in for the steel industry?
No. He had it in the positive sense, for the American farmer. Because
amazing.
What he felt was that the biological car, the vegetable car, would be the perfect vehicle, quote, for driving the American farmer out of the economic depression that farmers have been in for, you know, at least a decade and going back even further. And what happened was that World War II, of course, started in 1941, and right after the war we saw the maturation and development of the petrochemical industry, and we saw that the American agricultural industry really became export driven, and it relegated the biological car into the dustbins of history.
This is fascinating, because this whole day has been about lost science and the frontiers of early technology.
Well, the thesis of this report, the core of this report, is the revival of the biological car, not in the sense of a single car, but to begin, we're seeing more and more portions, parts of cars being developed that are using plant-based materials rather than resource materials like iron or other raw materials. And this is very critical because the U.S. auto industry is the largest consumer of raw materials. For instance, it uses 65% of the iron that we use, 60% of the oil, 50% of rubber and carpeting, which I found surprising, but that's what it says, and 20% of all electronics and aluminum that we use in this country. So we're talking about a massive consumption of raw materials here. The good news, though, is that now we're starting to see a lot more alternatives being developed. Let me give you just a couple of examples here as we go through this. For instance, in terms of fuels, in Brazil, there are now literally hundreds of thousands of cars that are running on pure ethanol. Hundreds of thousands of cars. In the U.S., there are about 20,000 cars. I mean, Brazil is way ahead of us, and they've developed an entire industry that has created many, many jobs for people developing the plants that then go into producing the ethanol.
Brazil has the babassu palm. Did you know that?
No, the babassu palm? Are you saying that, or did you stutter?
No, babassu palm.
The babassu palm.
Babassu palm. It's a palm tree, kind of.
Could we write a song about it?
Yeah, well, people have, you know. It's very famous in Brazilian mythology. And it produces coconut-like Well, it produces coconut-like nuts because it's like a coconut palm kind of, and they get a lot of that ethanol
from the babassu palm.
Yeah, I mean the babassu palm.
See, not only do I impart information in the show, but I learn information in the show.
Well, that's a two-way street.
It is a two-way street.
I mean, that's what we love about
this
show here.
So that's fuels. Let's talk fluids. Let's talk fluids.
Let's get juicy here.
All right.
Fuels?
You wanted to do what?
Can I talk fuels?
Talk fuels.
One of the things Henry Ford did with his soybean was to create a diesel fuel. Henry Ford had a technical trade school in Detroit. He named it after his friend, Tom Edison. It's called the Edison Institute. And one of my friends attended school there. They took soybeans, ground them up, soaked them in white gasoline, then distilled off the white gasoline and had a diesel fuel. Smells like you're behind a French fryer as you're driving down the road.
That sounds good. Can you eat French fries? Or do you cook them in your car? So, an interesting man, Henry Ford. He did a lot of those experiments like that.
So what else did you uncover, Harvey?
Well, and we're talking fluids here. Did you know, I didn't know, maybe you knew, that more than 90% of automobile fluids today can be replaced, or will be in the near future, with vegetable-derived products?
I had no idea.
I didn't either. More than 90%. How about you, Tom? Did you know that? God, three of us, and none of us heard it.
Well, that's why we brought you in here, because you have all these answers.
Here's some examples. A company called International Lubricants uses crambe, whatever that is, C-R-A-M-B-E. Anybody know what that is?
I never heard of crambe.
Maybe it's like a cranberry or something. I don't know. Crambe and rapeseed plants to produce 100% oil additives and 50% transmission fluid.
I know what rapeseed is. I mean, oilseed rape has actually been renamed canola oil.
Yes, it has.
So there you go.
A company called Agri Industry sells tractor transmission oil that's 60% from soy oil. Another company called Greenland Corporation, I've never heard of most of these companies, interesting, uses up to 95% canola oil for hydraulic fluids in gear oil in heavy equipment like garbage trucks, for instance. International Polyol Chemicals is about to release an ethylene glycol for antifreeze. And you know what it's made of?
Cough syrup?
I don't know why I ask you these questions. These rhetorical questions.
It tastes like cough syrup if you're a dog.
Really? Well, it's made from a variety of things, including cheese whey, cane or beet sugar, cornstarch, and or wood pulp liquor. Sounds good to me.
Oh, yummy.
You can have a whole meal. You can have a whole meal here and be warm at the same time.
You can go blind all of a sudden.
Well, that's later on. You'll enjoy the meal while you're warm. And then there's Agro Management Group, which is producing a canola engine oil for lawnmowers and generators and a variety of pumps. And they've got some tests that indicate it'll also work on engine oils. So there's another whole area of automobiles that we're redeveloping this whole concept of biology for cars. Another one is tires. 90% of tires sold in the U.S. are radials. And in radials, only natural rubber has the strength, resilience, and adhesive qualities to really make them work the kinds of loads that we put on them. And passenger cars now use about 33% of natural rubber in those tires. Pickups use 50% of them. So if you're buying a pickup today, you're going to, in your radial tires, 50% of it will be natural rubber. Large trucks and industrial machines use nearly 90% natural rubber. And commercial planes, military aircraft, and space shuttles use 100% natural rubber in their tires. So there's another whole area where we're going back to these natural-based products. We're talking about automobiles here. We've got some other reports.
Rolling right along on the journey home.
We got a theme. Right, rolling along. Ford. Talk a little bit about Henry Ford. Before, I'll talk a little bit about what Ford Motor Company is doing today. What they're starting to do is to conduct real-world tests on a fuel cell-powered mid-sized car, and they're going to be testing that this year. They're also developing a new hybrid electric vehicle, and they'll soon announce plans for a lightweight aluminum car that's a lot more fuel efficient. The company is working very hard to control, particularly in the first 2 minutes when you start an automobile, the level of hydrocarbons is much greater. So they're working on some technologies to reduce that. And in 1999, if you go out, as I know you're probably going to buy a sport utility vehicle or to buy a Windstar minivan, in fact, their entire fleet of those, which equals a fifth of their U.S. sales, will all qualify as low-emission vehicles.
Good news.
Good news. One of their competitors, General Motors, is testing a revolutionary charging technology for electric vehicles on its electric pickups in Southern California as part of Southern California Edison's fleet. And this technology, they claim, is 7 times faster than current chargers, and it'll reduce the charge time from hours down to minutes. And they've been trying these on, what they've done is they've converted a whole fleet of S10 pickup trucks, retrofitted them to accept what they call the PosiCharge fast charging system, which is designed by a company called AeroVironment, Inc. And what they did, they were able to drive nearly 800 miles in 24 hours on the streets of L.A. using this charging system. And what they did was that whenever there was a 15-minute opportunity, for instance, the driver went in to get some lunch or to make a stop, whatever, they hooked up the charger, and they found that they've reduced charging times that normally took 6 to 8 hours down to 15 minutes. And they could put these chargers into restaurants, into shopping malls, and a whole series of viable recharging sites. And so what that means is they're starting to really build the infrastructure here that will be necessary over time in the next 5, 10, 20 years to really make electric vehicles viable. And what they're intending to do is to take these posi chargers and to sell and service them through a nationwide distribution network of utility companies, including Boston Edison, Central and Southwestern Edison, Hawaii Electric Company, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, and a number of others that they're going to be doing this with.
And I did not hear in that list there the letters P and M.
I must have omitted it. Coming.
Hopefully.
It'll have to come.
They'll probably, they can come kicking and screaming, or they can really join the front end of this very exciting new technology to get in on the leading edge of what's next as we move closer to the year 2020. You're listening to the America 2020 Report with Harvey Stone on the Journey Home. We'll be back with Harvey and a special guest still sitting in with us, Tom Chikanowski, our mad gypsy scientist from Minnesota and points beyond, I sometimes wonder.